All right, well, the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur and Kasparyan with you guys. We've got a lot of amazing news for you today, including things for as serious as border crossings and hey, Chuck Schumer, is he gonna do the right thing? Well, we're gonna start with that in a second. That seems amazing. Mainstream media versus progressive media. And yeah, Satan's shoes. But I think that there's a really important point in Satan's shoes that I want to make. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for liking and sharing the stream. Oh, you didn't do that yet? No problem. You can do that now. All right. Would you be a hero if you did? I guess. All right, we're moving forward. Casper, what's the news?
All right. After efforts to include a $15 an hour minimum wage hike in the coronavirus relief bill failed, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is thinking about using another strategy, except his strategy is to literally just repeat what we experienced failed the last time. So what he's planning on doing is including the $15 an hour minimum wage hike as a provision in the upcoming Biden infrastructure bill. Now, this is a $3 trillion piece of legislation that Biden is really focusing on as what will make his legacy. This is gonna be his signature legislation. And so Chuck Schumer is thinking, well, this is definitely gonna have to pass through reconciliation. So why don't we ensure that we include a $15 an hour minimum wage hike in there as a provision. Now, first of all, I don't have anything against that, but I certainly think that there are some downfalls to this method, mostly because of what we experienced the last time around. So let me give you the details of what Ryan Grimm over at The Intercept is reporting. He says that Schumer has suggested to progressive groups that there's a glimmer of hope that the parliamentarian would rule differently this time. The new legislation is focused on infrastructure and setting wages is directly related to the budget impact of any infrastructure spending. If there's even a small chance of it working, he reasoned, it's worth the fight. Now, I'm again in favor of trying everything. The thing is, we've already tried this, not in the infrastructure bill, but specifically in the coronavirus relief bill. The unelected parliamentarian, which is essentially a glorified Senate staffer, said that under the so-called Byrd rule, you cannot include a minimum wage hike in that bill if you want to pass it through reconciliation, right? And so what happened? Well, Biden and Kamala Harris refused to overrule the parliamentarian. And in the end, what ended up happening was Senator Bernie Sanders, who is the chair of the budget committee, forced a vote, a Senate vote on whether or not to include that $15 an hour minimum wage hike, as an amendment in the legislation. And then you had 8 Democrats who voted against it. So there are two issues here. Issue number one, parliamentarian. Issue number two, we have Democrats. I'd love to say in name only, but we have all sorts of corporate Democrats who are not willing to fight on increasing the federal minimum wage. Few more details on Schumer's thinking, and then I want to get your thoughts, Cenk. Grimm reports that sources familiar with Schumer's thinking say that he's buoyed by the fact that the parliamentarian's ruling was just one line long, meaning it didn't offer any analysis that could be read as precedent. That the parliamentarian's analysis of the question was just one line long rankled some Senate Democrats, given that the parliamentarian is a staffer and her role is supposed to be advisory. So just to quickly comment on that, it just makes the whole debacle that we just experienced all the more infuriating. The fact that this Senate parliamentarian, an unelected glorified Senate staffer, was able to put out one line rejecting the inclusion of a $15 an hour minimum wage in the relief bill. And Biden and Kamala Harris are like, yeah, obviously, yeah, that one line is good enough for us. We're not gonna overrule her. It just, it's infuriating. But beside that point, Cenk, there are critics to what Schumer is saying. I guess I'm one of them because I just don't think that anything is going to change this time around. But you have a different take.
No, I have a completely different take. I love what Schumer's doing. And if you've been watching Young Turks, that is the first time you have ever heard me say that sentence in 19 years. So here's why I like the strategy, but I think it's bold. That's probably another first in TYT history. So if Schumer's going to put it in every bill, including this signature legislation of Biden that must pass, he's saying, okay, I'm going to actually try to pass this thing. If you didn't want it passed, you wouldn't put it anywhere near this bill. And you would do everything in your power to make sure that it's not in this bill. So the fact that he's saying he's going to put it in this bill is great news, okay? Number two, think about what he's doing though. He's putting Manchin and Sinema on blast, saying you're going to have to vote against minimum wage again, okay? So that's already super bold. Normally, what Democratic leadership does is they do stupid technical tricks that the press totally falls for 100% of the time. So it's super easy for them to do it. And they go, oh, there's nothing we can do. Yes, we can. We're never going to vote on it. And so in this case, he's doing the opposite. He's saying, no, we're going to vote on it this time, and we're going to vote on it every time. And the second thing he's doing, which is like, I almost hesitate in saying it because it's so bold, it's putting Biden and Kamala Harris in a difficult spot. Because every time Kamala Harris is going to have to say, no, I care more about the parliamentarian and their advice, their one line advice, more than I care about all of our voters, more than all of our promises, more than everything else, I care about this one line from the parliamentarian. That's a very difficult spot for Kamala Harris and Joe Biden to be in. And Schumer's putting them in a difficult spot. I've never seen that before. Democratic leadership is usually in lockstep. And they go, yes, they bury stuff like this. So I'm shocked by what Schumer's doing, and in a very positive way. Now, I do have significant criticism for progressives, because so-called progressives and especially so-called leaders, because apparently some of them are fighting this and it's to cover their own ass, which I will explain in a second. But Anna, can you not see, like, you see what I'm saying? If you wanted to not do $15 minimum wage, you'd never talk about it again. The national media would never bring it up again because they take their orders from Republican and Democratic leadership. This is the only reason you do this is if you actually want to pass it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think fighting for it and remaining persistent is important. So I give him credit for that. And I agree with your point about how really this is putting Biden and Kamala's feet to the fire, right? Because it is embarrassing for them specifically to continuously avoid overruling an unelected Senate staffer. With that said, though, I guess the reason why I'm a little more cynical or pessimistic about this than you are is the fact that Schumer can't just, and I feel like this is his tactic with gun control as well. He seems to think that as long as you have people vote on it and you just keep including it in legislation, well, then eventually maybe it'll work, right? Like, he even said something about putting a standalone gun control bill on the Senate floor and I'm gonna force Republicans to vote against it. And I think the mistake that he's making is that he seems to think that Republicans would be embarrassed to vote against gun control measures. And in this particular case, with a $15 an hour minimum wage, I just want to remind you all of the show that we were all treated to by Senator Sinema when she got a chance to go up there and vote on a $15 an hour minimum wage. This is how she did it. What I'm about to do, please give me brownie points. Please, don't I deserve a cookie? I'm a good girl. I'm a good girl. She walks over there with her clueless outfit and
Miss Sinema.
Happily gives a thumbs down to a $15 an hour minimum wage. Now, obviously, I'm providing that example because that was the most, I'm going to be generous and say disappointing since I've already criticized her outfit there. But with that said, I think the mistake here is thinking that all you need to do is include the provision or force a vote and then that's it. Yeah. Your work is done. No, you need to do campaigning. You know that a $15 an hour minimum wage is popular in red states like West Virginia, like Arizona. Get off your ass and go do the campaigning necessary to embarrass these Democrats and make them bend to your will. That's when I'll believe that you actually want to pass a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah, look, Anna, I agree with you. And that's what Bernie Sanders should be doing. He said if he became president, he would campaign in West Virginia to make sure that Manchin votes the right way. Well, he's the budget committee chair. He should go campaign in West Virginia. Instead, he's letting Manchin slide. This is a shocking role reversal. You're not going to find anyone on the planet more cynical about Democratic leadership than me. But Anna, in Schumer putting it into every bill, if he actually does, because look, it ain't done until it's done. He can say that he's thinking about doing it, but maybe once like people get a load of the consequences, he might backpedal out of this. But if he really sticks with it, I'm going to give him all the credit in the world, because by putting it in every bill, he's not embarrassing Republican senators. He's embarrassing Democratic senators over and over and over again. And that's what creates public pressure. So the very act of voting on it and having them vote, no, I'm against higher wages. No, I'm against higher wages. No, I'm against higher wages, while I wiggle myself voting no against higher wages, builds tremendous public pressure. Look, the next thing that's going to happen in the next bill is 8 Democratic senators voted no, right? 2 of them are from Delaware. Coons and Carper did not vote no without asking Biden. Biden voted no. Biden voted no. That's the reality, okay? He sent Carper and Coons to vote no on his behalf. If you know 1% of politics, you understand that. But obviously, no one in the national media understands 1% of politics. They're like, oh, the 2 Delaware senators happened to vote against it. What a coincidence, right? No. So every time they vote, Biden and Harris go, no, I don't care, and I'm lying, right? That's a very tough spot to put him in. If Schumer delivers, I can't believe it. I can't believe Schumer's going to do this. But if he delivers on that, no, he deserves tremendous credit. And that will definitely help us create the public pressure that we need on Biden, Harris, Manchin, and Sinema. And I want to say one other thing about that. Look,
and there are more real quick, Cenk, because it's important. It's not just like a couple of Democratic senators. I mean, it would be bad enough if it was just a couple of them, but it's not. And I'm not trying to be pessimistic for the sake of being pessimistic. I'm saying this because Schumer's got it half right. Right? Like, yes, he needs to actually go through with it, but it's not the end all be all. There's the second half of this strategy, which he needs to engage in, or, you know, if he has difficulty making the case, as, you know, he's not the greatest public speaker, get some more charismatic people within Congress to do the campaigning on your behalf. But nonetheless, like, we're talking about John Tester, Gene Shaheen, Maggie Hassan, Tom Carper, Angus King, like, in addition to everyone else that we already mentioned. So I just want to give you that context as well. But Cenk, go ahead.
Yeah. So look, guys, we have a poll on this. Should Schumer put it in these bills? Go to tyt.com/polls in specifically the infrastructure bill. Okay. And remember, the infrastructure bill could be great. And then that creates bigger conflict in the infrastructure bill. So yes, there are, you know, complexities to this. But I'm voting yes by a country mile. And to the point that Anna's making, yeah, I mean, the Senate majority leader is willing to embarrass 8 corporate Democrats to vote on this again in a must-pass bill that's Biden's signature legislation. I haven't seen that in my lifetime. And so I think that's a great development. And I'm going to say one more thing, guys. Now I'm going to quote Grimm's comment. And by the way, Grimm says later in the article, that's just his analysis, that he thinks those 8 Democratic senators would flip fairly quickly. The real key is Manchin and Sinema, right? The other 6 would flip. Look, Carper and Coons, the minute Biden says yes, they say yes. The fact that no one has pointed out such an obvious point is just shows you the complete failing of our national media. But I want to read you this part of Grimm's report in The Intercept. He says, Schumer, though, is encountering resistance from some backers of the increasing minimum wage, who argue attempting to include it is doomed to fail just as it did last time. And this is the important part. And in the process, it will trigger another wave of indignation from the public at the failure. Yeah, that's called public pressure. That is so-called progressive leaders in Congress saying, we don't want to vote on it because it'll embarrass us. Oh my God, that's embarrassing. Look, I don't know who his sources are, and he should never tell me. Okay, and I'm sure he won't, because he's a real journalist. But that is humiliating for progressive leadership to say, do not vote on our priorities, because we'll get public pressure because we suck at our jobs and we don't know how to make it pass. So Chuck Schumer, you're trying to help us? Don't help us, because it creates political pressure for us. Whoever that is should not be anywhere near leadership, shouldn't even call themselves progressive. That's absolutely embarrassing. You fight for your positions. And when you're lucky enough to have a corporate Democrat back you, are you crazy? You take it, don't, I mean, you're gonna look at a gift horse in the mouth. Are you insane? Oh, well, it might embarrass me because I suck at my job. Well, then it should embarrass you. Who the hell are these people? Look, right now, progressive leadership in Congress is in a very, very sorry state. That's just the reality of it. And I don't care who it offends. They've all gotten to be elitist now and go, we are Congress people. You cannot criticize us. How dare you give us public pressure? I don't remember any of them saying that as they were running against incumbents.
I think one of the biggest issues is that the public pressure is, you know, it's not organized, which means that what ends up happening, as we saw with the cinema story, is you'll see a piece of video that infuriates people, and the fury is justified, and then it just kind of dissipates. It just kind of goes away, right? And everyone's off to the next. That's why, you know, you might have criticisms over how Bernie handled the $15 an hour minimum wage battle in the relief bill. But putting that aside, you know, the other thing that he's focused on that I think is really important is getting workers organized, including traveling to Bessemer, Alabama to help galvanize the efforts to unionize among warehouse workers there. Once you have an organized workforce like that, that's when the public pressure becomes real. That is what this country experienced in the lead up to the New Deal. You think that Roosevelt just like decided to pass the New Deal out of the kindness of his own heart? No, there were general strikes happening. Unfortunately, a lot of those strikes ended up getting incredibly violent and brutal and bloody. But the victories that this country enjoyed as a result of that New Deal happened on the backs of organized labor. And so that's the other part of this as well. You need lawmakers who are willing to implement out of the box strategies. And I guess in this case, it isn't really out of the box, but a strategy. You need actual campaigning and policy work, political work done on the ground by these lawmakers to push for the policies that they're trying to pass. And then you need organized, labor to not only apply pressure temporarily, but apply persistent pressure until we get what we need.
Yeah. You know what, though? Bernie's good at putting pressure on people that he's not in a room with. So he puts a ton of pressure on Amazon, and I love it. And I give him credit for it every time. He's the one that got him to raise their minimum wage to 15. And how did he do it? He did it through a public pressure campaign. Now Schumer's giving you a gift. Well, you're still not going to pressure Manchin and Sinema? You're still not going to pressure Biden and Harris?
No,
that's ridiculous. So,
but how do you know he's not going to pressure? I mean, he wasn't mentioned in that article.
No, I don't know. I don't know, but I don't see him. Look, on $15 minimum wage, proof is in the pudding. Has it passed? No. Has he put any pressure, 1 ounce of pressure on Democratic colleagues? The answer is no. That's just a fact. That he didn't even want to introduce the bill for fear that they would vote and get outed. Well, so okay, now they got outed. And so is he doing anything about it? Is he campaigning in West Virginia? It's easy to put pressure on Amazon. It is not easy to put pressure on people that you think are your friends. See, I'm doing it right now. I'm endangering every friend and alliance that I have to try to get $15 minimum wage passed. If others are not willing to do that, okay, well, then you know their priorities. Sorry, Bernie, you get no credit until you pass it.
We got to take a break, but when we come back, we have a lot to get to regarding immigration, including all of a sudden the right wing pretending to be concerned about how migrants are treated at the border. We'll be right back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Here to read your comments. Someone who likes Bernie Sanders wrote in with a great point. I think this means that Senator Schumer is very worried about an AOC run for his seat. Exactly right. So when that happens, that's when you actually take advantage to pass bills. That's not when you sit on your hands and go, "Oh, I guess there's nothing we could do." By the way, when I say that, don't misunderstand me. We happen to mention Bernie at the end. I don't know that Bernie's doing that behind the scenes. I know he largely did it in the last fight. That's just reality. That already happened, okay? There's somebody in the House side who is super weak. But I don't know that she's the person scared of public pressure. So I'm not gonna say names, okay? Anyway. This is part of what happens when you, and for someone who likes Bernie Sanders, continue. This is part of what happens when you elect even just a few progressive Congress people. It makes the others worried about their left flank and become more progressive. He might not be a huge champion for progressives, but if he does what we want, I don't care if he's a champion. 100%. Who cares? Look, you will be judged not by your words, but your actions. So if Schumer puts pressure on people and gets the $15 minimum wage passed, well, then he deserves all the credit in the world. That's how it works. And by the way, you guys deserve all the credit. All of your hard work, all of you that volunteered, that donated, that gave to all of these progressive legislators, you didn't give it there for get them there so that Schumer can say, "Yes, let's fight." And they go, "Oh, I don't know, maybe not." No. The whole point of AOC being popular is to put pressure on Schumer so that he tries to get this passed. That's when you spring into action. Progressive caucus in the House. Progressive caucus. Where? Where are they? Okay. Anyways, Jane C, Beefy Pancake, LJ Eaton, all just sign up on YouTube, hitting the join button below. We appreciate it. You guys make this show possible. Anyway, I'm gonna say it. The force to vote people, they're like, "Oh, now you agree with forcing a vote." Yeah, dumbasses, on a $15 minimum wage where you could actually win. It's right around the corner if you fight now instead of, "Oh, Medicare for all." No one in Congress has, Biden says it's a hard no. No one's even gonna introduce it. And we're gonna pick a random ass, dumbass thing where we're doing a ceremonial vote on Pelosi. And we're gonna say, "Hey, why don't you push all your chips in on the dumbest vote possible," which will have no effect at all, right? And then since they're dumb, they can't tell the difference between something that could work and something that has no chance of working, something that's symbolic and something that's real. right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Anna, take it away.
Dignity to the people. Please give dignity to the people.
So you work for the commissioner, your senior advisor. You were hired 2 weeks ago, and you're instructed to ask us to not have any pictures taken here.
Please respect the people.
Because the political
rules.
Leadership at DHS does not want the American people to know it.
Please respect the rules.
You keep
sir?
Standing in front of the pictures, so
please
you don't want the pictures
rules.
Taken. The rules are arbitrary,
please
and they're designed
the
to keep
the
American
people
in the
dignity
dark.
Dignity and respect. That's all we ask.
Well,
dignity
no, it's
and
not.
Respect.
You're asking, is this
please,
dignity and respect? Look at these people.
Please give
there's
dignity
a pandemic.
And respect to the people.
Let me ask you. There's a
I
pandemic.
I respectfully ask you, sir.
There is a pandemic. Is this respecting the rights of these kids?
I ask you. Please
are
respect
you respecting the rights of these
this
kids?
This is not a zoo, sir.
That was GOP Senator Ted Cruz, someone who enabled Donald Trump's vicious policies over at the border, who enabled Donald Trump's mistreatment of migrants at the border, now pretending to be concerned about the treatment of migrants in these facilities. Now, before I give you more details about the faux outrage coming from the GOP, let me be clear about something. It doesn't matter if we're looking at videos from the Trump administration or the Biden administration. The way that these migrants are treated in these facilities is absolutely awful. There is virtually no difference. There's a reason why the Biden administration has not been transparent in allowing the media to go film inside these migrant detention centers. With that said, I think it's also equally disgusting that now we have this long line of GOP lawmakers raising their hands, pretending to be concerned about these migrants' treatment and lives, only because they want to turn this into some sort of political advantage for themselves and the Republican Party. In reality, there has not been a material difference between how Trump treated migrants, especially toward the end of his administration, versus how Biden has treated immigrants so far. Biden has used the same tactics, the same methods. He is turning every migrant away at the border, citing the coronavirus as the reason for that. He claims that he's different from Trump because he's not turning unaccompanied minors away. But let's be clear, the federal courts had already ruled in the tail end of Trump's administration that Trump wasn't able to turn the migrants away, the unaccompanied migrants away. And so even if Biden wanted to, he wouldn't be able to. So effectively, there's really no difference in the two administrations right now as we speak. Okay, the rhetoric is different, but the actions so far have not been different. And it's important for people to know that. With that said, though, let's hear more from these lunatics who pretend as if they care about anyone's lives, much less the lives of migrants. Take a look.
The wrong way to come is putting children in the custody of human traffickers. These are vicious transnational criminals. As several folks told you, we just saw a dead body floating on the Rio Grande coming by of someone who died crossing, no doubt, with a trafficker. This is inhumane, what is going on. And the Democrats have made decisions. Joe Biden and the Biden administration have made decisions that are causing these people to suffer. And to do this in a pandemic is particularly irresponsible.
I'm not going to give this up. I voted for every comprehensive immigration bill that's ever come out of the United States Senate. It is impossible for me to sit down with Dick Durbin and negotiate any solution to people already here, because if you legalize one person until you fix this problem, you're going to have a human tsunami.
So, Cenk, all of a sudden, the GOP is very concerned about how these people are treated, how these children are treated. They didn't speak a peep when Trump was taking children away from their parents at the border. If anything, they made excuses for it. They tried to justify it. They were nothing more than Trump loyalists and apologists. But what do you make of this story?
So, look, the issue itself is very difficult. Both sides are grandstanding. No one's actually answering any of the questions. So the reason it's difficult is if you say that you're going to turn away families, which is what Biden is doing, just like Trump did because of COVID, they claim. But you're going to accept unaccompanied children. Well, unaccompanied children are going to come. So that's just the reality, right? On the other hand, Trump would take the same issue and go, oh, I got a great idea. I'll make it worse. I'll reject everyone, or I'll rip the kids away from their parents. So they both have issues, and it's not an easy thing to resolve. But the grandstanding is just so sickening. Does this, come on, guys, is there still people in the country that are stupid? And the answer, unfortunately, is an overwhelming yes, right? Like when you see Ted Cruz saying that he's horrified by the inhumane conditions at the border. And you just saw him a year ago saying the inhumane conditions of the border were awesome. Like when Trump was locking up the same kids in bigger cages in worse conditions, Cruz thought it was a great idea. Now he turns around and he goes, oh, do you know that kids are being held in facilities? Oh, this is so inhumane. It breaks my heart. Shut up, you lying weasel. How could, if you're a right winger, how could you not see what a weasel he is and what an obvious lie that is? But meanwhile, by the way, not to the Democrats, because we're the only honest news show on the planet, apparently, because everybody picks sides and MSNBC kisses the ass of the Democrats and never challenges them, right? So wait, the children in those situations under Trump was horrific. Under Biden, it's totally cool. No, it's not totally cool. No. We reported on Homestead, about a week ago. Kamala Harris said, oh my God, this Homestead detention facility is outrageous. And the first thing I would do is shut it down. Biden reopened it. Okay, wait a minute now, wait a minute. So on the Biden administration side, I understand that this is a very difficult problem and it is hard to fix overnight. So you wanna give them a little bit of leeway, some time, to figure out how to do it right, okay. But that time has a limit. And so I don't know what the limit is, but we're probably coming up on it pretty soon. But both sides pretending what the other side did is terrible and what they're doing is angelic, while they both did the same thing, is maddening.
Right, and look, it's not an easy issue by any means, okay? And what we're seeing so far from the Biden administration is this effort to differentiate itself from Trump, and they're doing so simply by using polite rhetoric and giving people this sense that the Biden administration wants to approach this in a much more compassionate way. But all of these policies, whether they want to believe it or not, are they're intertwined. So for instance, when we're having conversations about the US-led coup in Bolivia or the multiple failed coup attempts in Venezuela, those stories are connected to what we experience at our border. The United States, through its foreign policy, goes in, destabilizes countries, throws out or overthrows democratically elected leaders. When their country becomes crime-ridden and unstable and people are looking for safety and they come to our borders, then we have the audacity, the United States government has the audacity to look at these people and treat them as if they're nothing more than a resource suck that we need to deal with viciously. And we need to look at this with a holistic approach. And so far, we have not gotten that from Biden. In fact, everything that we've seen from Biden regarding foreign policy has been pretty terrible. And then on top of that, then you look at the Republicans. And the Republicans have this talking point that not only drives me crazy, it makes me wonder what journalists get paid to do. Because when they make the quote or make the statement that you're about to hear Senator Kennedy make, the natural follow-up question is, in what ways?
And we at TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
We have not seen a single Republican lawmaker ask that very question. Watch the video and you'll know what I'm talking about.
What you see behind me, these children and these mothers and fathers and relatives, is a direct result of President Biden's policies. We need an immigration system that looks like somebody designed it on purpose. And this is not that. I mean, it breaks your heart. And all of these people here have been used, and President Biden has allowed them to be used.
So Senator John Kennedy saying that those children are being used as he's literally using them for his own political posturing. But with that said, he also tells reporters, all we have to do is go back to what we were doing before. President Biden undid everything that the Republican Congress and the Trump administration did. It'll be fixed in a week. Okay, what? Okay, so natural follow up. What exactly did Biden undo? What exactly did Biden undo? Because he didn't reverse Trump's policy of turning all of these migrants back as they're seeking asylum. That's what Biden's doing right now. The only exception is that he's not turning unaccompanied minors away, but that's because federal courts indicate that he can't do that. So literally Biden is not doing anything differently from what Trump was doing. So yeah. What exactly are Republicans talking about? And why is it that there hasn't been a single reporter who has asked that follow-up question? Not a single one, not one.
No, I mean, you want to talk about reporters. Okay, let's have that conversation for a second. Are they going to ask both sides? And look, I don't know if there's a single honest person on the right wing, but can you guys challenge your own politicians at all? So because we do it. So, and we're asking reporters to actually be nonpartisan. Say, look, I saw the same exact photo op when Trump was in charge, except replace the Republican senator with a Democratic senator. The Democratic senator was saying, it breaks my heart. Now you have a Republican senator in the same exact place with different kids, but the same situation going, it breaks my heart. Oh, come on, man. You guys are all frauds. But, mainstream media can't say that because they have a kiss the ass of politicians. They're frauds. It doesn't break their hearts. They don't even have hearts. Okay, so do you think Kennedy, that monster, cares about those kids? Then why wasn't he out in front of that same exact place when Trump was doing it? We had those. Okay, so now the second part of that. In 2019, we had the same exact numbers that we have now, though that was under Trump. So now all of a sudden the Republicans are like, oh, crisis at the border, crisis, crisis. Biden's making the crisis. Okay, every reporter should ask them, here's the exact numbers from 2019 that matches the numbers today. So was Trump a disastrous failure that created a border at the crisis? Crisis at the border. And you agree with Trump at the time. So did you create a crisis at the border with the same exact numbers and the same exact situation? Do your goddamn jobs. You're supposed to hold the powerful accountable. They actually make it really easy for you because they're such blatant and obvious hypocrites and liars. Lindsey Graham, in that same press conference we showed you earlier, a reporter did do a good job from the Independent and asked, hey, what is your policy suggestion since 18 of you guys are here, 18 Republican senators are here. So you obviously came with a suggestion to fix this. And Lindsey Graham basically said, how dare you? You're politicizing this issue. You guys showed up for a political photo op. And then you have the nerve to say, I don't have any ideas. I'm an idiot. I don't have any ideas. I just came here to be a hypocrite. And I'm a politician and I'm criticizing a reporter for politicizing things. Then why the hell did you go down there for a photo op? I mean, Lindsey Graham is so easy to pick apart. He just flies his hypocrite flag everywhere he goes. You're going to get intimidated by that fool. Do your jobs. Call out Democrats and Republicans.
Well, we're going to be calling out the media even more when we come back from the break, because CNN does not appreciate the American Prospect's reporting on how they might have been duped into reporting on a staged migrant crossing. We have that story and more for you when we come back.
We'll be right back.
during the break here, Colorado Blue Blazer regular wrote this in our member section before I went on the rant that I just went on. So they wrote in, I don't even blame Cruz or Graham or any of these clowns. Hypocrites are going to hypocrite. I blame entirely the MSM idiots, the mainstream media idiots, who credulously sit there and listen to these clowns with zero pushback. The media is 100% complicit. Look, it's impossible to disagree with that. It's the same numbers, same cages. And Democrats and Republicans brazenly flip positions and are now claiming, now the Republicans are claiming their hearts are broken and the Democrats are claiming their hearts are mended. I mean, if you can't call that out, just become a plumber or go be a banker and make real money, okay? At least when you sell out there, you'll get to buy a nice house. So I know the anchors have mansions, but a lot of the reporters that are on the beat, they don't even make that much money. They're selling out for nothing. Ahmed Bravo on YouTube Super Chat made the same point Anna made again before she made it. That's happened in Honduras, saying Honduras elected democratically elected a president, and the U.S. took it out, and now the U.S. has this problem. Okay, yeah, our audience is, I'm telling you, infinitely more educated and smarter than the average, not only the average national reporter, probably the top national reporter. Okay, whatever that is. I mean, you want to talk about it anyways. Okay, Detroit Microsound says, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And you and I are not in the big club, quoting George Carlin. Okay, and that's exactly it. And George Carlin, it was for shade too cynical for my taste, believe it or not. But man, he nailed a lot of it. He got it at least 90% right. I'll tell you that right now. And Null Unit on Twitch, holy cow, gave 10,000 bits. I'm not sure I've ever seen that. And wrote in, does TYT fill me with joy? I guess. Do you fill us with joy? I don't even guess. I know. Thank you. I love doing this show with you guys. You guys have no idea in DC and in media circles, business circles, political circles, people that are always like, oh yeah, who's backing you? We'll go after your backers. Yeah, fine, Null Unit. Good luck. Okay. You guys support the show through membership, through the bits, and through all that stuff. And so they can't take away our power as long as we're fighting together. What are they going to do it 10 bucks at a time? No, they're used to billionaires controlling everything. You guys make this show possible and they don't know how to react to it. So you give us the freedom to be honest and truthful. And that's a hell of a thing. Sneaky Gaming on Twitch said, longtime listener of TYT podcast, just joined on Twitch a few months back. Thanks for the great content. And I love that you did that. We appreciate it. Anywhere you could be a member for us, go ahead and do it. If you can upgrade, that's great, because we've got to bring truth and yes, change to this system, which sucks. So on YouTube, you hit the join button below, tyt.com/join on our website, and on Twitch, if you have Prime, you know it's free. TYT, Jake and Anna with you guys. More news.
All right. Well, CNN did not appreciate the fact that the American Prospect had published a report about a video that was making its rounds, not only on CNN, but it was also being used by the right wing. And it appeared that this alleged attempt at crossing the border by migrants was staged. Okay, so that's what the piece by the American Prospect is speculating. And then you have CNN responding to this report. The title is, "Did CNN Air a Staged Migrant Crossing of the Rio Grande?" What they do is they provide some quotes from people who used to work for Border Patrol and other experts who felt that the video had many characteristics that raised red flags, things that were incredibly strange. Now, before I give you the details on what the red flags are, I think it's important for you to take a look at the video in question here. And what we did is we combined both the CNN report and also the Fox News report, which, as you will clearly see, uses the same footage. Take a look.
They have life vests for the migrants.
It's a highly organized system. We'll watch the raft make about 6 trips back and forth. Scenes like this are escalating in the Rio Grande Valley.
Yes, in the Rio Grande Valley, where I was yesterday at the river crossing, just hundreds on the bank coming. And I can tell you, it's certainly in full force right now. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy speaking out yesterday. He'll be making a trip down to the border on Monday. Here's a little bit of what he has to say.
So, what are the red flags in that video? First of all, I'm sure you guys caught that the smuggler made 6 trips back and forth in broad daylight, which is a strange and curious decision to make when you're trying to smuggle people. And with that said, the American Prospect, Marsha Brown reporting, also notes that in the CNN footage, the smuggler leading the boat wears fatigues and a black ski mask. Smugglers typically attempt to blend in with migrants to avoid more severe punishment should they be caught. Smugglers also don't normally provide face masks and life vests, nor ferry 6 boat loads of people across in broad daylight. Migrants also don't typically line up in single file along the shore to cross. Marsha Brown also reports that the Guardian reported that the area of the river where the footage was taken can only be accessed by US Customs and Border Protection controlled boat slips. So there's that element to it as well. Now, CNN, Cenk, did not like that report. And let me be clear that the American Prospect did not accuse CNN of staging it. But there is some suspicion that the crossing was staged and that Border Patrol may have had something to do with it. But nonetheless, David Dayan says this. Here's Oliver Darcy of CNN calling the American Prospect misinformation after not responding to any of our questions for a week and misstating the nature of our report. He also botched my quote. I said 100%, let's break this down. And so he provides screenshots of what the criticism is coming from CNN. And they argue CNN did not stage the crossing. No one accused them of that. No news organization would do such a thing, but the claim was picked up by right-wing media outlets eager to attack the network. Fox's site and other conservative sites aggregated the American Prospect post, suggesting it was possible that the entire report had been put on for show. But again, let me be clear, the American Prospect never accused CNN of staging it. It's very possible that Border Protection could have staged it. And this kind of stuff actually happens all the time. Like, you'll have members of the intelligence community plant a story in the New York Times in order to manufacture consent for the next forever war we engage in. And the reporters mistakenly think like, ooh, goody, I got a scoop. But little do they know, they're usually being manipulated. That could be the case here. We don't know for certain, but what we do know is that CNN never responded to any of the very real concerns listed in that report by the American Prospect, Cenk.
Yeah, well, somebody should get fired over this. So I'm gonna give you the two options. So number one is somebody at CNN who thought, oh, I got a tip that a mile from a port of entry, we're going to stumble across immigrants crossing in broad daylight in a way that they normally don't do. Oh, golly gee, we got on the boat. And just as predicted by our Republican handler, there's a boat crossing with a guy in a ski mask, so you can't tell his identity when it's taped. They cross 6 different times as we're taping them, which is what criminals always do. Oh, there's film crews. I would like to get caught on camera. Let's do this over and over again. Then there's 2 tapes. the CNN tape, and then the other one that Fox News is using that we showed you comes from Tripwires and Triggers. So that's a right-wing website. They happen to tape the same boat on the same day. They also got lucky and stumbled across the same migrants, okay? Now, here's the amazing part. There's a former border agent, Jen Budd, and she points this out. So in this, I'm gonna quote the American Prospect story here. One person says to the other in the right-wing version of the tape, okay? So they're shooting from different angles at different times, but the same day, right? And so the right-wingers on their tape, you could hear them say, quote, do you ever hook these guys up? They're so dumb, they said it on tape. And CNN's like, oh, well, I don't see it. I don't know what you're talking about. One of them says, do you ever hook these guys up? And another person responds, yeah, two or three of them, they're grade A. So who on our side is hooking up the guys who are illegally bringing in migrants and taping it at the same time, pretending to be outraged by it? How could you be paying them and be outraged at the same time? All right, in her Medium post, the former agent Bud says, as a former agent, what I hear is these men possibly talking about paying this smuggler off to gather a bunch of unsuspecting migrants and have them cross in a particular place in order to get this shot. So this is not that complicated. So look, as Anna pointed out, and mainstream media gets very, you know, bothered when you point this out because it's true. They get used all the time by politicians.
All the time.
Right?
All the time.
And by the way, it's not just Republican politicians. Democratic politicians use them, and they play along for access. I mean, Oliver Darcy's explanation was embarrassing. They're like, he's like, oh, this is a conspiracy theory. We check with the government, and the government says it's okay. Oh, yeah, that's real journalism. This sources that told you to show up at this particular time, at this particular place so you can get this photo op, told you that they didn't set it up. Oh, and you trusted them. Is that, that's what we're calling journalism? That's what we're calling journalism. But okay, let's say that CNN is right. And my God, their reporter just happened to have a boat, happened to stumble across these migrants who the right wing also happened to stumble across the same day. Man, what a lucky break that was, okay? All right, so let's say that happened. Well, then obviously, people at Customs and Border, somebody's gotta get fired. So they're a mile away from your port of entry. They're crossing all day long, back and forth. Well, everybody's taping it and nobody shows up to arrest them. How deeply incompetent is Customs and Border Protection? Whoever's in charge, if CNN is right, why aren't they demanding accountability? Isn't that your job as journalists? And saying somebody at Customs and Border should definitely be fired. This is an area you control. They explain in the American Prospect piece that foot traffic triggers alerts on our side. So an alert was trafficked right next to you. You didn't notice it. Several camera crews stumbled upon it. They went back and forth all day long. You didn't do anything about it. And sometimes now on the right wing, they're like, oh, that happens all the time. What do you mean that happens all the time? At that same place, they're saying. Well, then Customs and Border obviously are at a bare minimum, grossly incompetent. This is not thousands of miles of border and you can't figure out how to track it. That happens all the time. This is a specific spot and everyone in the world apparently knows about it except Customs and Border Protection. Look, the reality is, hell no, they don't know about it. It's so obvious this is a setup. So look, I don't know, man. I don't know if CNN, Oliver Darcy, et cetera, have an ability to be embarrassed, but this is deeply embarrassing if you're pretending to be a reporter.
No, but that's the thing. I think that they do have the ability to be embarrassed. And for them, admitting that they made a mistake is more embarrassing than just doubling down and then labeling some other organization that's critiquing you as misinformation, right? And I think that's where the problem is, right? It's okay to recognize where there might have been flaws in your process. And it's not just CNN. I mean, think about the way, here, a more recent foreign policy related story, the way that Iran gets reported about, right? You have anonymous officials within the intelligence community leaking things to the New York Times, and then they just print it. They just print it. Same thing happened with the Washington Post and the New York Times in regard to the coup that the United States backed in Bolivia. Now, of course, initially, that's not how the New York Times or the Washington Post reported it. They didn't refer to it as a US-backed coup, but they helped to spread this absolute lie about how Evo Morales was engaging in voter fraud or in election fraud in order to win another term. And then later, very quietly, they had to retract that story because it turns out that they got played by the Organization of American States, the OAS, which has an interest in overthrowing, or they had an interest in overthrowing Evo Morales as the leader of Bolivia. I'm just giving you that example because it happens all the time. It's not a scoop when someone in a position of power comes to you. It might be a scoop, but you have to do your due diligence as a reporter and ensure that you're not getting manipulated or played. Because that's it.
So Anna, sorry, I think that one person should be let off the hook here, and that's Erin Burnett. And so I've critiqued her in the past, but not this time, because she actually asked the reporter, Ed Lavandera, Ed, you happen to stumble across these people? And he actually then started stumbling and bumbling and gave a non-answer while they were doing it live. Okay, Erin Burnett asked the logical question: you stumbled across these guys, and the reporter had no real answer for it. So look, I don't know if CNN really is in the news business. Brian Stelter's their media critic. I don't know if he's allowed to criticize his own network, if he's allowed to look into his own network for even 1 second. Okay, but there's a very legitimate question. Hey, Ed, how did you happen to stumble across these migrants? Who tipped you off? You don't have to tell us your source, right? But internally at CNN, if they do news at all, and if they have a single editor that cares about news, they should ask, hey, Ed, you can tell me your source. You don't have to say it publicly. But who was your source and why did they know that this thing was about to happen? You should ask those questions. Because if I'm a reporter and somebody tells me, oh, I got a massive illegal thing happening that I know about, I'd say, really? How do you know about it? How do you know when it's going to happen? Those are natural questions I would ask as an editor. I don't know if CNN has any editors. And so, but last thing here. We're fair. So when Erin Burnett asks a good question, we say, hey, that's a good question. That was an act of journalism on air live with her own reporter. Okay. On the other hand, CNN, that's why I'm picking on Oliver Darcy here in particular, because he's the one that attacked American Prospect and smeared them as doing conspiracy theories. No. And said, oh, the right and the left both do it. No, you got played by the right wing. And now you're going to smear the left wing as a way of helping the right wing even more? Oh, it's unbelievable. By the way, tomorrow on the conversation, we're going to have David Dayen from the American Prospect and Marsha Brown, who wrote the story and who did a great job in exposing this story. So again, mainstream media, you live in a glass house. For you to throw a stone on a terrible story that you did without doing any internal investigation is deeply embarrassing.
All right, we got more news for you. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening in Bessemer, Alabama. The historic union vote count actually begins today in Bessemer, Alabama. And this is the effort for warehouse workers in Bessemer, Amazon specifically. Man, that was clunky. That was very clunky. Let me do that again because I care about our editors and they can't fix that. So the historic Amazon union vote count begins today. That means that the voting on whether or not to join the union has already ended. And so now the tallying process will begin. And this is a really big deal, guys, because there are about 8,000 warehouse workers in Bessemer, Alabama. This is the largest unionizing effort for Amazon workers. The last time that we heard about workers in Amazon trying to unionize was in 2014. And it was just a small group group of maintenance and engineer workers who were trying to do it, and they unfortunately voted against it. In this case, it would pack a punch, and it certainly did get a lot of national attention. Now, on Tuesday, the federal labor authorities will begin tallying the votes, a process that could take a few days. Regardless of the outcome, Amazon or the union are expected to pursue legal challenges. Now, as that happens, it will take place internally, and that's when there might be some disputes about whether or not certain ballots should count, but that will not be open to the public. Following that part of the tallying, there will be the ability to live stream. They're going to live stream this, and the public can actually watch as they tally the votes anonymously to see whether or not they were able to get enough votes to get a union for these workers in Bessemer. The Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, which is looking to represent Amazon workers in Bessemer, has called this union push, quote, the most important labor struggle in more than half a century. The process was kicked off in November when about half of the workers at the Bessemer warehouse had signed cards to petition for the election. And one of the things that certainly did help to galvanize the workers there was the national attention that it received from people like, I'm going to keep it real, Joe Biden, who put out a video supporting this effort. And just this past weekend, Senator Bernie Sanders also traveled to Bessemer to, you know, help support the efforts there. Let's take a quick look at that video, and then I'll get your thoughts, Cenk.
The reason that Amazon is putting so much energy to try to defeat you is they know that if you succeed here, it will spread all over this country. And I just had a few minutes to chat with some of you about the heat.
It's too hot. It's too hot.
I get messages on my computer saying, do not touch the fan, do not turn the fan on.
Because we do have air. They're just not using it.
The fact that when you get a 30-minute break, it takes you 10 minutes to get to the break station and 10 minutes back.
They explained to me that working in this facility is like a 10-hour workout.
The way that we work is meant to mentally break you down.
A man who's worth $150 billion who will not provide air conditioning, who penalizes people for being a minute late.
If you're 1 minute late, it takes a whole hour of unpaid time.
Is that right? You lose your whole hour if you're 5 minutes late or 1 minute late?
All the Amazons around the world going through the same thing.
Think about a woman having a heart attack and falling out behind you because she's so hot and tired.
There's this older woman who was stationed next to me one night. This woman passed out.
She passed out.
Well, she had a heart attack.
It's time for us to start taking a stand and stand together and fight.
So they're standing together and fighting. Unfortunately, we won't know today whether or not they're going to join this union, whether or not they have enough votes, but we should find out in the next few days, and we'll share those updates with you as we learn them.
Okay, first I want to give credit to some people. That was Killer Mike you saw there. He's a rapper. What's he doing there? He goes there because he cares. That guy's awesome. But it's my job to correct him on the facts because we do news. Bezos isn't worth $150 billion. He's worth $180 billion. And that's after the divorce. Okay, so you don't have time to give your workers more than a 5 minute bathroom break. They say it takes about 5 minutes to get to the bathroom in that giant warehouse. I mean, they're timing your bathroom breaks, man. Okay, so Bernie's been fighting on this. World of Credit. He pushed Amazon to get to $15 minimum wage in the first place. Now they're bragging about it like he didn't do it. He's down there fighting. I'll give Biden credit too, because that's definitely not going to make the Chamber of Commerce happy. And usually corporate Democrats never, ever want to displease the Chamber of Commerce. I know the unions give a ton of money to Democrats as well. So that's obviously part of his equation, but credit where credit is due. I don't care. You know, where he got the money for it. Good. Okay. Now I got to be honest with you guys. This is the first time they're trying to unionize anything related with Amazon since 2014. And before that, it was 2000. I don't know what Amazon's situation was in 2000. I don't know how small or big or mid-sized they were, right? And so that one failed because there was the dot-com bust, et cetera. So no, it is what it is. That's okay. But no one tried to unionize Amazon between 2000 and 2014, and between 2014 and 2020, nobody tried that. Do you know that unions go and sometimes try to unionize progressive campaigns they don't usually do it to corporate Democrats, to load up more costs onto progressive candidates, but they don't have time to unionize Amazon in 20 years? That's unbelievable to me. Unbelievable. So I'm glad that they finally figured out, oh yeah, that's the largest company in the world. And the owner has $180 billion and is squeezing workers to no end. And maybe we should fight a giant corporation. Congratulations for figuring it out. I hope they win. I hope those folks get real rights. And that's where a union is awesome if you do it right, because those folks need help down there. And Bernie's right. If they win down there, that could happen all across the country. It's not just that it would embolden the workers. It might actually embolden unions to take on giant corporations instead of tiny ones.
Well, the thing with Amazon is, and look, I don't know about every effort to unionize at Amazon. I know that the last effort was in 2014. But to be clear, Amazon is vicious in the tactics it uses to prevent its workers from unionizing, intimidation. One of the more recent tactics that we learned about was that they were hiring off-duty cops in Bessemer, Alabama, to intimidate their workers there. There was a video detailing it. They also had changed the stoplights at intersections, so the red light would be much shorter. That way, the organizers would have less time to be able to actually talk to the workers. They're not able to organize on the Amazon factory property, right? So they have to do it outside. And so they were doing this at intersections when people were stopped at red lights, and Amazon found a way to stop that from happening. So they're pretty vicious, and you know, Alabama is a right to work state. One of the things that they're doing is they're forcing all of their factory workers to attend these mandatory anti-union meetings where they're, propagandized about all of the alleged harm that could happen as a result of the union representing them. I'm sure there have been more efforts than we know about, but Amazon has been able to, basically squash those efforts through these types of tactics. It just hasn't really worked out for them in Bessemer.
I'm going to say one more cynical thing. So, you know, everybody keeps saying if we could happen in a deep red state, right to work state, like, and that's a misnomer. It's basically anti-labor statutes like they have in Alabama, it could happen anywhere. So why isn't it happening everywhere? Why isn't there a union drive in every Amazon warehouse? I just don't get it. I literally don't get it. I don't know what the unions are doing. There's these giant, giant corporations that are abusing their workers to no end. And every decade or so we get, hey, go golly gee, let's hope it works in Alabama. Even if it doesn't work in Alabama, you should do it in other places, because they're not allowed to go to the bathroom in Ohio either, or in all the other states.
Well, by the way, look, this is why it's so important, Cenk, because this did galvanize warehouse workers and Amazon workers across the country. And that's exactly what Amazon wanted to prevent from happening. And so now this retail workers union is being contacted by Amazon workers across the country. We're talking about Iowa, Southern California. I don't have the list in front of me right now, but there are all sorts of red states included there as well. So the national attention to this has been important, and I'm glad that there are pretty high profile members of Congress and the president. I mean, that's not a small thing. Biden speaking out in favor of this, it did help to galvanize it. And more importantly, it helped not to just galvanize the Bessemer, Alabama warehouse workers, but workers across the country. So hopefully, this trend continues, and they can't keep the genie in the bottle. Like, that's what Amazon's been trying to do, and they're failing, luckily.
Yeah. Man, by the way, the other thing about labor is if they can't get the PRO Act, why did you pay all those Democrats all that money if they're never going to deliver anything for you? And you can't get the $15 minimum wage. What are you guys up to?
Well, what's the other option? What's the other option?
The option is to kick the Democrats' asses, the corporate Democrats who they're best friends with, and actually hold them accountable and say, hey, if you don't pass the PRO Act or $15 minimum wage, we're never going to give you another dollar. Okay, that's hardball. Instead, they go attack random people for no reason because they feel like, oh, we could win that fight. No, you should win the big fights so you can get actual labor in this country and the union effort to be big, bold, and strong. So let's see if you got any fight in you. If they don't pass the PRO Act or $15 minimum wage, almost every union leader in the country should be fired.
Yeah, I mean, this is a longer discussion. We should talk about it in the postgame show because I have a lot to say about it. So become a member at tyt.com/join. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you can become a member on YouTube. It's easy. You get all sorts of perks, including our exclusive bonus show that comes after our main show. So check that out. And let's take a break. And when we come back, we have more news for you guys, including updates on the Derek Chauvin trial.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.